Welcome to the American Cinematographer Podcast. Go behind the scenes with today's top filmmakers as they discuss the techniques they bring to the art of motion imaging.
This podcast is sponsored by the ASC Masterclass, a five-day seminar taught in Hollywood. Learn more at theasc.com.
Welcome back to the American Cinematographer Podcast. My name is Ian Marks, and in this, the second of two episodes focused on The Man Who Killed Don Quixote, I'll be speaking with the film's director, Terry Gilliam, via Skype from his home in the UK, about picaresque tales, finishing what you start, and collaborating with his longtime cinematographer, Nicola Pecorini. And now, on with the interview. Mr. Gilliam, thanks for being here with us today and for taking the time to talk some more about The Man Who Killed Don Quixote.
And didn't kill me yet.
So the film opens with the titles 25 Years in the Making and Unmaking. Now, whether or not the audience is aware of what came before, how important is this knowledge to the understanding of the completed film?
It isn't really important at all. I put that up there to lighten what looked like was going to be a rather portentous beginning. And for those in the know, the fans and all, I might get a smile before the film starts. That's what it was about. But it certainly allowed a lot of the reviewers to spend a lot of time talking about it being very autobiographical and a result of all of the years of difficulty, which it wasn't intended to be. It's supposed to stand on its own two feet.
Well, when you're making art, you kind of have to draw from your own personal experience, right? And the way the film is being described in the reviews is as this quixotic pursuit.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that?
I think that's fair, because it was rather a quixotic attempt to hold on to an idea and to make something out of that idea over all those years. I mean, to be quite honest, it is that one becomes a bit Quixote-like to do a Quixote movie. All my films really become about what the subject is, become so much the process. And this just did it on an epic scale, let's put it that way.
I haven't read the book yet, though I'd really like to since my conversation with Nicola, and it's my understanding that your film hews rather closely in a cinematic style to Cervantes' literary style, in that it mixes realism with meta-commentary and meta-textuality, be it the source material, other films, the film within the film, and even your own work.
Yes, it's there. A lot of it was... What is interesting about the original Quixote? There are two books. And the first one was a big success. And the intervening years before the second one, in fact, created the second one because of the success of the first Quixote book. There were all these imitators out there. And Cervantes got a little bit pissed off at that. And so the second book begins with Quixote in bed having, that's how we last saw him in the first book, finished, washed up, just going back to bed. And Sancho comes in and starts talking about all these adventures they've been having. And Quixote says, "What are you talking about? We've been nothing. These are not true. These are other stories. This is nonsense." And Quixote gets so angry with the fact that somebody else is writing his tales that he gets out of bed and heads off with Sancho to do things very opposite to what has been written, just to show these were lies and the true story is the thing he is living. So that was... that idea seemed very central to what we were trying to do with the film. And without thinking it through too much, it became that way. I mean, I don't really approach my work thinking about what I'm trying to say in the sense how autobiographical it is, how much it relates to the past, how it relates to the process, but it somehow comes through always. And I only discover this after I've finished the film, that this is what I've done.
What you just said reminds me of that moment in the film, Toby's line, when he asks himself, you know, who wrote this ending?
Yeah.
And later on, his boss, played by Stellan Skarsgård, tells him to just follow the plot.
There's a plot. There's the scene that comes on quite later is where Quixote is saying, these are our stories. You have to believe in your own story, not somebody else's story. Those were important ideas we were trying to get in there. And the fact is that they related to the actual life I've been leading for the last almost 30 years now.
I wonder if it goes back even further than that, because one of the things that kept popping into my head while I was watching Don Quixote was The Fisher King, your other film about a knight errant in contemporary society. I mean, Robin Williams even quotes the book right before we meet Michael Jeter's character in Central Park. So given all the similarities between your work and Cervantes' two books, it makes me wonder how long Quixote has been with you.
Well, it's interesting because a few months ago I was at a screening of the film and we did a Q&A afterwards, and somebody brought up the similarity between, the film and Fisher King. And I had literally never consciously thought about that until that moment, which is really intriguing. I mean, for me, either I'm just incredibly naive and I can't see my nose in front of my face, which many people have accused me of, or I don't know what else it is. It's just, I mean, Quixote as a character is one of those characters one seems to know of if you've got any sort of education or even awareness of our culture. It's always been there, but like most people, I had never read the book, the original book, and it was only until in 1989 when I called my, at that time, executive producer and said, I need $20 million. I got two names. One is Quixote and the other is Gilliam. And then having done so, I realized what an idiot I've been. I don't seem to understand anything about these stories other than the most superficial. And then we went to work. And while I'm thinking about it right now, I want to get the word picaresque in, because it's an important word, and it is what the film is, and it is what the books are. They're picaresque tales. They're not tightly composed cinematically or even literary stories. They're one thing after another. It all adds up to something in the end, but it isn't like it's the kind of structure where everything relates to everything else. It's constant new things that occur, which is interesting because many of the reviewers that say, the film's a rambling mess, it's only because they can't think in terms of picaresque tales. They think in terms of the way people are taught to write film scripts. And I think the one thing that intrigued me was when I was in Spain and then later when I was in Paris, I met in both countries the lead translator of Quixote at the moment. And they both saw the film completely separately, and they both said, you've actually captured the spirit of Cervantes. You've actually captured what he was doing. And that, to me, the two best reviews I got from anybody, as far as I was concerned, whether it's a good film or not, was almost secondary to the fact that we were true to what Cervantes was doing. That's why this term picaresque is really important. And if you get this in the podcast, I'm happy. That's all we need.
You've suggested that some reviews come across as a surface-level interpretation of the film, either because the writers don't know where you're coming from, or they don't have the relevant experience to understand it, the film. But in their defense, it took me a couple of viewings to really find my own bearings. And the first viewing was so chaotic that I really felt like I was being just pulled along on this adventure.
Correct.
And there was no time to catch up. And I knew that if I wanted to have an intelligent conversation about it, I would have to see it again.
No, I agree with you totally. I've been just telling people after I've seen the film or they've seen the film in the Q&A, I said, watch it a second time. You'll get a very different experience. Everything will be clearer to you having done it a second time. Because the first time, we don't take prisoners. Basically, we're going rampaging through at a pretty good pace. And things happen. And there was actually, I just read recently on my Facebook page, somebody who saw it and said he was underwhelmed when he saw it. It wasn't like quite what he expected. And especially since people had been waiting in some cases 20 years to see this thing. So it's very hard to come up to what people's expectations will be. So he was underwhelmed, but then he watched it a second time. And he watched it a second time because later, I think it was the next day, the film was still hanging with him. It had caught him on some level, even though he wasn't sure it was he had seen, but it hooked him enough that he went back and watched it a second time, and there was a different experience, which is the way it should be as far as I'm concerned, now that we live in an age of streaming and DVDs rather than people actually going to the cinema.
In your introduction to the Fisher King screenplay, you mention a guardian angel and that someone was watching over the film while you were making it. And there's a kind of romantic, idealistic sensibility that governs your attitude towards the creative process, which is something that I also see in your interviews about Quixote, playing the Quixote role.
Hmm.
Is that how you see yourself, a kind of quixotic artist, an idealist and a romantic?
Well, I think I've always said that I feel when I'm making a movie, I am merely the hand that is writing. I'm not the idea. The film is making itself, and I'm just the means it gets made. And it becomes, every film I make becomes kind of mystical at some point. It's either it's a battle with making me, because for me it's not the great exquisite toy that Orson Welles dreamed of when he talks about filmmaking. To me, filmmaking is very hard. It's just hard, and it goes from euphoria to just despair. And some point along the way, I'm just trying to survive the process and trying to cling to whatever it was that originally inspired me. And that's how it works. So I actually do feel, and this is one thing that Tony Guzzoni, who co-wrote the script with me, said, because he said, people are going to say that I am Quixote. And he says, but you're not. You're actually Sancho Panza. The film is Quixote. And I'm the guy that keeps picking the film up and keeping it moving forward to finally become whatever it is.
That seems like a more honest appraisal, because the other inference of quixotic is that you might be crazy for chasing this dream when it'd be almost crazier to let the dream die.
Yeah, that would be the easier thing. But it's like, again, when and hopefully you get around to reading the book, it's Sancho is an equal partner in the process of the Don Quixote story, because you need the dreamer, the fantasist, the one who sees the world differently, and then you need the mule, sort of the guy plodding along, picking up the body and dusting it off and wiping the blood off it, and then keep moving forward. And that's kind of how I felt during it. I was never feeling, oh, this is the most important thing in my life. It was the fact that everything conspired to get the film unmade or never made. And I just wasn't willing to let that happen. And I resisted all the commonsensical, reasonable attitudes that people were always telling me. And also, I couldn't get rid of Quixote. It's a bit like Sancho. He can't get rid of it. Quixote keeps turning up. So I would go off and do other films, you know, Zero Theorem, Tideland, Brothers Grimm, and then I'd finish those, and there would be Quixote, you know, just this demon that wouldn't let go of me and said, yeah, come on, I have to go. We're going to do this thing.
Nicola said that one of the reasons he likes working with you is that you like to exercise control over your work and you know what you want. But how do you find the balance between maintaining control and being flexible enough to dream and adapt with adversity whenever that giant rears its ugly head?
I don't know. I guess it's being a Middle Westerner from Minnesota, a Protestant-based lad who was raised to be like that. It's kind of that. I think it's a real love-hate relationship with all these ideas that possess you, that you really want to escape them, but you can't. And I just feel that if you begin something, you should finish it. It feels like that to me. And to actually go partway towards making something seems to be a failure. So you should actually try to finish it, and hopefully it's okay. I think there's different stages along this process, though, because there's the years of trying to get it done and failing, working with different producers who would promise this, that, and the other, who would then fail. It was always about failure to raise the financing. So it was always about. So you go through all of those, and along the way, you get bored with reading the same script. So let's come up with some new ideas. So the script is constantly shifting a bit. You hold on to certain things from the original one, and you add other things. And it's just like this big clump of clay that we keep reshaping. And then you get bored with it, and you try it a little different way. And so the film was about, ultimately for me, was getting through the 10 weeks of shooting, which we did in 2017. And the great thing about this film is we actually came in on time and on budget during the shoot. And that was really important. So we're working in a way that I would accept that. It's not as what I really wanted, but that's good enough. Let's keep moving. And then after finish shooting it, you go into the editing room and throw away all the bits that you don't like and hold on to the things that did seem to work. And so it's just that period of the 10 weeks and the months in the editing room that made the film. Everything else just happened to be part of life that you lived long before.
Speaking of filming, your movies have a very distinctive style. Lenses, camera angles, camera moves. How much of this depends on the way a cinematographer translates your ideas?
Yeah, it's always interesting. I mean, because where the camera goes, the shots, I'm there. Whether Nicola got the shot quicker, set up quicker than I could get there is the next thing. It goes together. With Nicola, we really don't argue much about the stuff. I mean, it's pretty obvious. You need that shot, you need that there. And you did. What was interesting for me in this one was that we were avoiding the extreme wide-angle lenses, basically. And I was shooting it in a more conventional way. I didn't want to draw attention to the filmmaker. I was just trying to say, this is Toby and Quixote's tale, and we want to be more observers rather than throwing the camera down in very dramatic angles and all of that, except for when you need them. By the time we get to the giants, we suddenly are going to extreme angles and everything. But up till then, it's quite conventional, is the way we shot it.
Well, I wouldn't even call it conventional, because one of the other films I was reminded of while watching yours was Federico Fellini's 8.5.
Oh, you know, yes.
Another film about the inner lives of filmmakers that also works on multiple levels of reality.
Yeah.
And I think they'd make an excellent double feature, actually. I'd love to watch these two movies back to back.
I think that's a really smart thing to suggest, because that's one of my favorite movies. And yes, it's probably, they would sit very nicely together, I think. You're right.
And it's not obvious in the photography in Quixote, but the thematic intent is there in the tone and in the sense of place. So even without the camera or the lighting doing anything crazy, you still don't know which way is up or down.
Exactly. Some of the reviewers are so critical about this. They really get disturbed by the fact, what's surreal, what's real, what is, you know, what's fantasy. They want to be told, they want to be held by the hand, and we're going through this really exciting, strange world. You don't know what's going to happen, but trust me, is all I keep saying. I find children have an easier time with a lot of my films than critics do, because critics are trying to think it out, and I keep saying, don't think this out, just follow, come for the ride, and then at the end you can decide what you felt, whether it was a good ride or not. It's a very weird, because this word mess has been used in a lot of the reviews, and it's a lazy way of describing something, because it isn't a mess. There's a structure there, and each thing has a reason. But it doesn't work in the way where everything is tightly constructed, that this thing will lead to the next thing, will get you an answer about that. I think I could have shot it in different ways. I could have been much more clear what I'm asking the audience to think at any point. But that didn't interest me. I mean, I could shoot it in many ways where you know, that's a dream. That's just a fantasy. That's real. I just wanted this connection of all of that, so you couldn't know, because the story is really about Toby beginning to suddenly begin to see the world like Quixote. I tried the idea was that the world isn't changing, but Quixote is actually changing the perception of the world, and or what seems to be the perception of the world. Everything is explained because each thing is there for a reason. But it's that flowing back and forth and through and around, even with going into the past. I was originally planning to do things with different color palettes for the different ages and the different times in the film, and then just threw it all out and said, "Fuck it, we've seen all that before. Let's just see if we can smooch it all together." So you've got to try to hold on, because suddenly you're now in the past, and now you're back to the present. And that was the fun of it for me. It's also, it creates problems for a lot of people who are watching it.
You've been working with Nicola for as long as you've been trying to make this film. How much of your creative process is wrapped up with his? We touched upon this a bit earlier, but do you find that there's a kind of osmosis that occurs when you're working so closely with another person and for so long?
No, we work very easily. We grunt at each other. We don't do much more than that. And we kind of, you know, it's. I was thinking about before you and I talked, because every other film I've done with Nicola, I usually have a particular painting or a particular artist and or photographer who is what we're trying to go towards. And I realized I didn't do it on this one. Over the years, we had collected all sorts of paintings, Spanish paintings, everything, and you know, and Gustave Doré's illustrations were just black and white. All that had been going on. So by the time we got around to making the film, we didn't have this normal conversation about which style are we going for, which palette. We didn't do it at all. And the only thing we did was argue about anamorphic lenses. And he convinced me to go for it. I hate anamorphic lenses. He may have mentioned that to you already. I don't know.
He didn't mention that, actually, but I'd be certainly interested in hearing your thoughts now.
Well, they're lovely lenses, what you get on the screen, but the actual weight of those lenses and the time it takes to change them wastes my time, as far as I'm concerned. The shooting time. That was one of the things I found extraordinary about how long it took. And we're in these difficult locations, and the camera crew are hating humping these lenses up the mountainside. I just found them so bulky, and it slowed down. It actually got to the point where I wasn't changing as quickly or as often as I normally would. I would say, "Oh, we're stuck with that one. Okay, we got to shoot. Let's go." I mean, the end result is they're beautiful, but I like lighter, smaller lenses to work with, frankly.
How has your creative process developed over the past two decades? Do you feel yourself refining a perspective or branching out and trying new things, particularly with all of the new developments in motion picture technology, like smaller, lighter cameras? I also understand that you used the same Taylor Hobson anamorphic lenses that Vittorio Storaro used to shoot Apocalypse Now, and those must have weighed a ton.
Well, anything that is faster is what I like. it's just about speed is what I'm really ultimately interested in. I mean, yeah, they're great quality lenses. I don't spend much time. One of the most satisfying moments on Quixote was when we got the GoPros out and we stuck the GoPro on the back of Nicola's iPad, and that became our camera. And we shot the black and white stuff that way. And I thought, God, I love this kind of filmmaking. It's so light. You can sit there, hold an iPad, which gives you a really nice image. And there's a GoPro stuck on the back of it, pointing where you want to point. And certain things like, well, Toby's black and white film was all shot that way. We had a scene that we literally had no time to shoot. And I said, "Come on, we're going to do this thing." We had to get to another location, and the only way we could do it is get there quickly. We had a couple of people from costume, a couple of people, one person from makeup, and Nicola and me and the iPad and the GoPro. Boom, we did it. And we would never have got that scene if it hadn't been for the lightness and simplicity of that. And I love it. I just love working that way.
Here's a question that I asked Nicola. This film shows us the destructive nature of a selfish process and how the world can collapse around an artist when they take more than they can give. What is the result when an artist is generous with their creativity?
I don't know. I think creativity is a thing that isn't one artist at work, as far as I'm concerned, when I'm making films. It's the whole team of people, and it's the way we work. I like to work with people who are really good, and I'm really good, and we can speak at a level that is, you know, quality level. I don't like working with people who aren't very good, because you spend your whole time trying to explain the most simple things to them. And I don't think about the creative process when I'm supposedly within the process. Sometimes I can be specific about what it is. And normally that's, I think, my skill, is that I can be specific. I can say, no, it should be this color. It should be made out of this fabric. Or when we're building sets, yes, it should be like this. We don't need that. You don't have to build the fourth wall. You don't even have to build a third wall at this point, because we won't be shooting that. It's just the craft is what it's about for me. It's never the art. The art is something one thinks about in advance, and hopefully you kind of distill it so it's within you when you're doing the work. And just working with good people is exhilarating, because they're better than me and they're coming up with more interesting ideas. And I just become this filter. That's it. I don't know. I really don't talk about art much, because I find it's a word that's so misused, and I don't like it. Craft is more important to me.
How does it feel to have the man who killed Don Quixote out there in the world, this thing that's inhabited your dreams or your nightmares for a quarter of a century? Or is Quixote still with you, like a part of you?
Not really. It's my wife keeps saying, you've made the film, it's out there. My problem is it's not been seen or being seen by sufficient number of people to keep me happy that it was all worth it. And so I spend a lot of time, you know, promoting and still not getting the numbers I'd like. I think it's a film that will probably over the years will be seen to be or be liked a bit more. I don't know what it is. I was just reading, this is a very weird aside, because, you know, several years, I think it was 3 years ago, 4 years ago now, I was announced dead by Variety magazine.
What, like physically dead?
Yeah. No, there was a thing. I had just rediscovered this is the article, and it was their online edition. And the headline was Monty Python's Terry Gilliam dies at XXX. And then it went on and then had my obituary. It was a mistake. Somebody had pushed, you know, because obituaries are written for anybody who's halfway well known, well in advance. And somebody had pushed the wrong button at the wrong time. And I was dead by Variety. But what was interesting about it, I could just read part of what was on the page. And it was talking about Jabberwocky, my first film. And they were describing the film in almost the same terms that they're currently describing Quixote.
What terms are those?
Again, a kind of a complicated mess that we couldn't follow. It seemed to be maybe full of some interesting ideas, but blah, blah, blah. It was just, it's to say, my films, not all of them, but too many have actually gotten the same kind of review. And then 20 years later, they're deemed to be, you know, fantastic, great films, which I find not irritating, but I just find that one has to run this gauntlet through criticism and or critics, not criticism. I don't mind criticism at all. I just don't like critics who can't even write a good, bad review. I mean, I'm very happy when I read a bad review of my films that's well written and getting to the point of the problems with the film, because I probably am more critical of the film than half of the bad critics are. And it's nice when you read that kind of review that understands what is wrong with what the flaws in the film are. But you don't get to read those very often. And even the good reviews feel nice to your ego. It's a nice ego massage. But when I think, oh, they haven't got it either, that's really sad. I'm happiest when I can talk to people who just, you can see they really had a good time with the film and they haven't spent too much time trying to analyze it. They just knew they'd experienced something that made the world look better or more mad or crazy or wonderful, whatever. And that's the stuff that's nice. I think I'm almost going out of my way now to make films that are easy bait for critics.
I mean, I can't imagine what a hard time would look like if The Man Who Killed Don Quixote is an easy bake. Well, let me ask you this. Well, who did you make this film for then? Was it simply because you wanted to see it, or was it for the benefit of an audience?
What I want is to communicate ideas to people. I really do. And I want as many people to see them as possible. It's as simple as that. And when I'm cutting the film, I screen it to people. People like some, their friends or friends of friends of friends of friends. People, I don't know. Get people. And then I do a Q&A afterwards, trying to work out what works, what doesn't work, what confuses them, what didn't confuse them, where they were bored, all of these things, and talk it through, because I am trying to communicate my ideas. But I don't alter my ideas to please people, is what I don't do. But I do want to know whether I'm communicating or not, and I will do everything in the editing stage that I can to communicate. And that's it. It's as simple as that. I don't do these things just for myself at the end of it. I don't sit and watch my movies. They are for other people's enlightenment, enjoyment, or anything.
Well, that is very generous of you, Mr. Gilliam. And thank you again for being generous with your time today. It's really been a pleasure speaking with you.
Great. Well, thanks. And hopefully you can cut this down to something listenable to.
Well, we barely had to touch it. That was director Terry Gilliam talking about the making of his film, The Man Who Killed Don Quixote, and his collaboration with cinematographer Nicola Pecorini. Thanks for listening. You can find more podcasts and articles on the art and craft of cinematography at ascmag.com.
This has been the American Cinematographer Podcast. Thanks for listening. You can find more podcasts, blogs, and exclusive ASC content by logging onto theasc.com. This podcast has been brought to you by the American Society of Cinematographers, a nonprofit organization dedicated to promoting the art and craft of cinematography.